We'll call our meeting to order. I see almost half of my committees here now, so we better get going. As I could say, welcome to the candy store.
No, that wasn't it.
Well, as many of you know, we spent a lot of time from Labor Day till into December going all over the state, I guess over 100 meetings on site. Many of you on the committee were on many of the trips, and many of you were not. And I was able to listen to those of you that were on it, and I couldn't listen to those that weren't. Well, 300 meetings, but the sites were 100 and something. So on. But, I thought about writing up two bills, one what we're doing and another one what we're not doing. But it would have wasted so much paper on those that we're not doing that I didn't. But we are doing less than one-third of the request. So if you didn't get what you want or as much as you want, you've got a lot of company. But we did try to put together a responsible bill. We did try to put together a well-balanced bill. As many of you know, if a Republican has a project, and I would do that for a Democrat, it's in there. On the front page, I guess we got to start. We got to hand them out. You people want to build? No? Think that'll help?
I'd like to look at it.
Okay. But don't trample anybody.
Brian.
Who's bringing?
Yeah.
Okay. First, we'll hand them out to the committee members here, and then please, when we wheel them out here, we don't want any casualties.
Make sure Senator LeClaire gets one. I don't want him trampled.
Did you see?
I saw him. You used to be somebody, didn't you? You used to be somebody, didn't you?
Like, yes, sir.
Speak up. Yeah.
Oh, that's terrible.
Still funny, isn't it?
Possible damage to the people there.
Yeah, what's more, sir?
They're always like, "Oh, we ran out. We'll open some more."
We do have a new member of the committee who wasn't along on any of the trips. Our new member, Mr. Perry? Okay. Raise your hand so everybody can
see.
There
you are.
Welcome.
Chair, can I offer that Senator Day has briefed Senator Prairie on all of the trips? And
Prairie.
He knows the projects.
Yeah. Aren't you impressed? This is really
Yeah, Senator Day isn't here. He was the lead. You had almost had a separate chair for him or something. Advice and consent or something.
This is a bigger than usual committee.
And Mr. Chairman, who's the new lead Republican?
What's that?
Who's the new lead Republican on the committee then?
Oh, the same one we had before. He's a retread. Senator Coring.
Senator Coring.
Is the lead.
That and $2 will get me a cup of coffee, so.
Well, if it wasn't for your projects in here, why, we would be down at the governor's level.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You didn't know it was going to be that
much. I probably should have said that about Senator Sinjum and Ann Lynch. I think that would have been closer. Of course, there's Duluth also that. Okay. 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 Are you going to be ready to give it to the
really be better to pass
public
them out
here pretty quick?
It would be better to pass them out than rush.
Okay, but
we need to pass them out. Let's come to the
Okay, I guess it's available for you right there, but don't follow the table or any of that stuff.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is there?
There's a lot of
Okay. Just like the common folk. Have a pleasant day.
Okay. Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman. Senator Langseth.
Yes.
The other day I'd asked you about the Falwell Hall number, and Kathy, you said it was a...
Yeah,
it's still a typo?
We got a little...
It should be 23.
I don't want to lose my time.
Yeah.
It should have been 23.
See, they lowered it. This is the old number. It's 24.
They requested 23, so it should be 23.
That's their latest request. Earlier they had requested the number we got, and we just didn't...
So it's supposed to be 24-3.
No.
No, it's supposed to be 23.
We put 24 in, but
yes.
All they need is 23.
Okay.
So, it's,
so you're going to change
it's
that.
It's a little slush there.
In kind
of. Never
okay.
Oh.
It's on $1.3 million.
Yeah. So.
Can I spend that $1.3
million? Oh,
I found
it.
I hear you.
Get what you need.
They didn't hear me.
You think?
You ignored me.
Yeah. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, I hear you.
Huh?
My husband. Made 120 and 150. Oh, yeah.
No, I ignore him.
Press ones
are saved. They're saved.
I know you do.
I
missed that part of the tour, so I'm not sure what they are.
Maybe you're going to have to bring some more.
It was in Southwest Minnesota.
So
I had to leave for the day that they worked.
Was our driver.
I think at the end of the
They'd
already done all your stuff.
Was he too?
They told us to
in the end, I had room on the trip, and Karen really wanted to go again. She went in 2003.
Well, they've got something in here.
She wanted to bring Dave, and I said, you guys just go. You have friends over there. You just get a guidebook and go. But they really wanted to go.
If Adam isn't doing anything,
Senator Gerlach.
It's funny, 100
But he was very familiar with the organization.
Of course.
Really easy to get along with.
Yeah, I always bring
pictures.
Thank you.
Like
I guess there weren't enough copies for everybody here, I believe. Maybe we could bring in a few more.
Why don't we have
We saved back some for the press conference, but I guess we could get some of those written up. Well, we will get started now anyway. On the front page here, this is very typical of what our bonding bills have been in recent years. About one-third of the total is in higher education, and this balance between the university and Minsku is pretty much what it's always been. Minsku has about three times as many students, but the U, of course, is into other things other than just teaching. There's research and so on. So this is very much following. And when we talk to the people at Minsku, or University of Minnesota, the president and so on, this is basically what they had suggested. They wanted a higher number for HEPR, asset preservation, and they wanted Falwell Hall first. And this, what is it you really call this one?
Physics and nanotechnology.
Oh, yeah, physics and nanotechnology. They wanted the planning money for that. So we really did go with what they requested prior to the time we put the bill together. The Minsku, as you can see, the HEPR number isn't as large as we'd like it to be, but, of course, they have a very long list. And so many of those projects are total renovations. So it's really sort of a super asset preservation on so many of those projects. So I don't know if any of the committee members have any questions on that front page or not. If not, I will have Kathy go through sort of line by line where we have funded, and I will probably make some comments as we go along. And if you have some questions or comments as we go along, feel free to do so. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, starting with education, the Red Lake School, $5.78 million, and that's for just part of the project. It's the kitchen and part of the middle school. The library and accessibility grants is $2 million. For the state academies, we have $500,000 for the blind campus independent living residential construction and $2 million for their asset preservation. Under the Purpich Center for the Arts, the Alpha Building is being demolished for $755,000, and then the Delta Dorm Windows Project, $489,000. And that prefab building is necessary because they're storing things in the Alpha Building, and when it's torn down, they have to have a place to put it. Under the DNR, we have $4 million for dam repair, and we have a list of 10 dams in the bill that you'll see that are covered with that. $2 million for disease shade tree removal and replacement. Flood hazard mitigation is $70 million.
I probably should make a comment on that. That's about the same level as last year. Last year, quite a bit of it, of course, was the recovery part that was matched by the federal. I think it was $17 million. I made a commitment up in, well, this isn't just for northwestern Minnesota, but for the folks up there, of course, it's more crucial. And my commitment was that no project gets held up because of lack of state money. And I think this amount will do. I do appreciate the governor's $50 million. That was a sizable amount of money, no question about that. But I could spend a lot of time, you know, explaining where the $70 million would go. But I do want to say one thing. You know, after the 97 flood, we spent quite a lot of money, and the Senate was always about double what the governor and the House were. But because we spent the money we did between 97 and the 2009 flood, with a higher crest in 2009, there was a fraction of the damage that there was in 97. So we got our money all back in one flood. But we have to move on from there. At some point, I would expect this would be the highest number that you will see in the future. That big core project for Fargo-Moorhead is going to be like a 10-year project, so spread out over 10 years. I don't think we're going to need this kind of money in the future. But by 2011, with this amount of money, I think we could wrap up protection for every city in the Red River Valley with the exception of Moorhead. And like I say, that would be a long-term thing. So if there's any questions about that later, that's fine. I'll take questions.
But we're taking questions now on that or not?
But yeah, if you wish.
Well, $70 million, how much is that matching from the federal government then? Is all $70 million of it, does that mean? Or?
No, it depends on the project. Some of the projects and some of the communities have federal participation, some do not. That big project that they're talking about for Fargo-Moorhead, that will have a lot of participation on the part of the federal government. Like Breckenridge, they're just about ready to wrap things up. There was federal participation there. There's been federal participation on a lot of Roseau. But there are some of the communities, it's strictly state and local. But many of those are getting close to wrapping up, too. I think Crookston, we could see them through probably 2011. I think Roseau, we can probably complete them by 2011.
Mr. Chairman, and then obviously this is a very high number. It takes away from other projects that you talked about before. Is there $70 million worth of projects that are ready to go this summer? Or when? What's the timeline for this $70 million?
I think most of it would be spent this coming summer. Now, this Fargo-Moorhead project, the city of Fargo has got 0.5% sales tax, going to raise $273 million over the next 10 years. There is no commitment at this point on paper for the Minnesota side. Part of this would be the commitment for that larger project. Not a very large portion, but we really have to have some commitment there. But most of it is ready to go.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, forest stand improvement is $1 million. Groundwater monitoring is $1 million. The Hennepin County Fort Snelling Upper Bluff building renovation is $1.2 million. Native Prairie or I'm sorry, Forests for the Future is $500,000, and Native Prairie Acquisition and Development is $500,000. And this Lake Zumbrill project in Olmsted and Wabasha counties is $3.75 million.
I think many of you remember when we were down there. This is silted in so badly. It's a beautiful, beautiful lake, but it is silted in so badly that they're going to have to dredge that out, and this would be some help in that direction.
The RIM critical habitat match is $2 million. Forest roads and bridges, $1 million. SNA acquisition and development, $500,000. State land reforestation, $3 million. And then this next section is state and regional parks and recreation areas. And you'll see, I don't know if you want me to go through all of the small projects, Senator Lane?
Well, I think they can probably read those. If there's any comments on any of those lines,
Okay, so it's $8.3 million for the state and regional parks and recreational areas, and then $5 million for state trails rehab, and $20.935 for acquisition and development of state trails. And then regional trails, connections, and other projects is $5.718. Under statewide asset preservation is $7 million. The Two Harbors Campground expansion is $1 million. And wildlife management areas and aquatic management areas is $1 million. Pollution Control Agency, there's $500,000 for the Becker County Transfer Station. $5.8 million for closed landfills. $5.075 for the Perham Resource Recovery Facility, and $6 million for the Pope Douglas Waste-to-Energy Facility. Under the Board of Water and Soil Resources, $4.2 million for local government road wetland replacement, $10 million for RIM, and $1 million for the Minnesota River Area 2 grants. Under the Minnesota Zoo, $15 million for the master plan and $6 million for asset preservation. Under admin, $8.075 million for asset preservation, and that includes $75,000 for pre-design for the governor's residence renovation. $2 million for CAPRA, $100,000 for the public servant memorial in Eagan, and $2 million for the local cooperative service grants. Under public safety, the Camp Ripley Phase 2 Emergency Management Training Facility is $6
million. That's in two parts. The request was $6 million, but we didn't do the dormitories this time around. We probably might sometime in the future, but this takes care of that project that they were wanting.
The Maplewood East Metro Fire Training Facility is $3 million. The Marshall Safety Training Facility, known as the Merit Center, is $1 million. The Minneapolis Emergency Operations Center is $750,000. The Princeton Joint Public Safety Building, $2.8 million. And the Scott County Safety Training Facility is $1 million. Under amateur sports, $5 million for the Rochester Volleyball Center, $4 million for the Moorhead Regional Sports Center, $2 million for the Mighty Ducks Grants Program, and that is specified to be going to Big Lake, Dassel-Cocato, Fergus Falls, and New Hope. And then $950,000 for the Women's Hockey Center in Blaine at the National Sports Center.
I would just like to come in on that. That came in kind of late, but they have a contract with the American Women's Hockey, Olympic Hockey, and they really felt they needed to upgrade that somewhat. And it's a 10-year contract, so this was a late request to come in, but I thought it was worthy.
Okay, under military affairs, $4 million for asset preservation, $1 million for facility life safety, $900,000 for ADA alterations, $5 million for the Cedar Street Armory renovation, and $1 million for the Troop Support Activity Facility renovation at Camp Ripley.
Mr. Chair, on the The Cedar Street Armory renovation is that the existing Army Reserve building right down the street here? I thought there was talk about, I mean, that's an old, kind of a lousy building, I think, and I thought there was talk about building a new one. Is it smart to, I missed that the time we debated this, but does it make sense to put $5 million into that building that we've talked about for the last 10 years about knocking it down and building a new, modern military training facility?
I guess.
Anybody have the answer to that? I mean,
I don't believe we've heard that. I don't know. If anybody else here,
if we get somebody from the department there, just briefly. I know we don't want to drag this out, but for example, we put about $60-70 million bucks already in the transportation building over here, and some of us thought years ago, let's go somewhere else and build a brand new building. But we kept putting in 20, 25, 30. As you know, Mr. Chairman, you and I had agreed on some of this, but I'm just wondering if we're throwing good money after bad in this building.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, there is no current
plan. Could you identify yourself?
I'm sorry. Terry Palmer, Department of Military Affairs. There's no plan to exit that facility at this time.
Well, Mr. Chairman, at this time, but I mean, if you're, you know, we were talking about building a new one over on University Avenue not too many years ago, but go ahead.
Right.
But we've managed to underinvest in that facility to the point where it's really gotten to be well-worn. So I think this is a smart move to at least extend the life of that building for another 15 or 20 years, because we haven't heard of any plans to be able to construct a new facility to replace that one.
Well, my memory is not that bad. But go ahead.
Okay. If you think it's, you know, right thing to do, but I mean, it's going to look the same from the outside. I know that. All right. Any idea what a brand new one would cost?
I'd hate to venture a guess, sir. It's probably 30 some million dollars.
Okay. Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Senator Stump.
Chairman, I think under the military affairs, there's a typo in the bill.
Well, you're one of those guys that reads bills. Got it.
Well, it's just $1 million off. But
what's that, is that all?
No, I think there's a zero missing on page 32 on line 32.6.
Is that Rozo again or something?
No, it's not. This is for Camp Ripley. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, boy, we don't want to.
Senator Coring was.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's going the other way, though.
Yeah. What?
Oh.
It is.
Yeah. You should have waited for Senator Coring to catch that. If he hadn't caught it, it would have saved a lot of money.
Yeah, that's right.
Go ahead.
Okay, we're up to transportation. The local bridge replacement is $67 million, and within that, we're specifying $1 million for the Fairmont Bridge, $1.5 million for a bridge in Fergus Falls, $10 million for the Lowry Bridge in Hennepin County, and $7 million for the Northtown Rail Yards Bridge in Minneapolis.
Some of this is heavily leveraged from the federal government, and hopefully we would get an awful lot of jobs for the amount of money.
Greater Minnesota Transit Facilities is $2.5 million. The railroad grade warning devices replacement, $2.5 million. Now, this next bunch is Trunk Highway Fund bonds, and the Rochester Maintenance Facility, 2.2, Maple Grove Truck Station, 15.8, Arden Hills Training Center, 4.75, Little Falls Truck Station, 3.3, Maplewood Bridge Crew Building, $3 million. And the Duluth International Airport is $11.7 million.
See, this one has got over $40 million federal. How much? 43? 43. So for $11 million, we get like $54 million worth of building, which job-wise, this is heavily leveraged.
The Chisholm-Hibbing Airport is $2 million. Minnesota Valley Regional Rail Authority is $6.5 million. Rail Service Improvements is $2 million. The St. Paul-Hoffman Rail Yards, $100,000. North Star Extension from Big Lake to St. Cloud, $1 million. Port Development Assistance, $3 million. The Thief River Falls Regional Airport hangar is 2.097. And under the Metropolitan Council, we have $10 million for Metro Regional Parks, $1 million for the Invergrove Heights Swing Bridge, $500,000 for Hennepin County for the Midtown Farmers Market, $2 million to Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board for the Sculpture Garden and Conservatory, $3 million for Municipal Inflow and Infiltration Grants, $11 million for the Como Zoo and Conservatory Infrastructure, $1 million for the Theodore Wirth Olympic Training Center, and $30 million for the Transit Capital Improvement Program.
Mr. Chairman.
I don't know who's calling. Senator Lynch. Okay, Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to make a comment and observation on the transportation portion of this bill before us today. And there were over $80 million in rail-related requests that came before the committee and in the various jurisdictions that we visited. And in light of the number of rail proposals that came forward and in conjunction with the newly released statewide rail plan, I think that it's time that we have a very serious discussion on the long-term funding options for rail infrastructure and rail operation in the state. And I'm not sure that putting all of the pressure on the bonding bill and on this committee is the most logical long-term approach. So I hope that we can be mindful of that as we move forward.
Hey, thank you. Go ahead.
Okay, under health, we have $5 million to Hennepin County for the hyperbaric chamber replacement and $20 million to Ramsey County for the Gillette Children's Hospital. Under human services, we have $3 million for asset preservation, $2 million for early childhood learning grants, and $125,000 for memorials and grave markers for deceased residents and cemetery ADA improvements. Under Veterans Affairs, we have $4 million for asset preservation and $450,000 for the Laverne entrance enclosure. For corrections, we have $8 million for department-wide asset preservation and $3.259 million to Oak Park Heights to improve the perimeter security fence detection system. Under deed, we have $475,000 to Bemidji for the Headwaters Science Center, $2.217 million to the Chatfield Arts and Community Center, $500,000 to Hennepin County for the African American Museum and Cultural Center, $13.9 million to Mankato Civic Center, $5.3 million to Minneapolis for the Granary Road stormwater and roadway infrastructure, $14.1 million for Minneapolis Orchestra Hall and Peavey Plaza, $1.5 million to the City of Ramsey for their water recycling treatment plant, $34 million to Rochester for the Mayo Civic Center, $15.1 million to St. Cloud for their Civic Center, $3 million to St. Louis County for the Arrowwood Amateur Sports Complex, $5 million to St. Paul for the Asian Pacific Cultural Center, $15 million to St. Paul for the Ordway Center, $250,000 for design for the to St. Paul for regional baseball facility. $20 million goes to the Greater Minnesota Business Development Program, and included in that is $1 million to the North Branch Business Park and $200,000 to the Pine Tech Business Park. $4 million to the Bioscience Grants Program, and $10 million to the Redevelopment Grant Program, which includes specifically $2 million to Lake Elmo.
Let me see, $5 million is $4
million. Under the Public Facilities Authority, we have $10.8 million for the Drinking Water Capitalization Grant State Match and $19.2 million for the Clean Water Capitalization Grant State Match and $27 million to the WIF Fund. Mm-hmm. Under the Housing Finance Agency, we have $10 million going to public housing rehabilitation. And under the Historical Society, we have $3.4 million for asset preservation and $9.357 million for the Oliver Kelly Farm historic site, and $1 million for the county and local historic preservation grants, with $150,000 going to South St. Paul for the Air Force Museum. The bond sale expenses are $1 million, and we have a few cancellations. The Department of Administration had a few miscellaneous that add up to $1.403 million. The BCA headquarters is $525,000. The Bayport Storm Sewer, $150,000. Rushford Redevelopment, $600,000. The DNR for a state facility rehab, $2.283 million. The Department of Public Safety match for federal disaster of 09, $3.9 million. The St. Paul Phelan Boulevard, $201,000. And then these are trunk highway bonds, the Urban Partnership, $9 million, and the St. Paul Headquarters Building, $9.5 million. So the total is $999,963,000.
$36 that's left unspent. Obviously, everybody's going to call it a billion-dollar bill, but there's no credibility at all for them saying it's over a billion. So, comments.
Mr. Chairman.
Lead man here, Senator Corrin.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, just for the Republicans' sake, what's the plan? What's the chairman's plan? I think I know what the plan is. Sending the bill to the floor, going to the finance committee, and you're talking about a vote on it on Monday. Is that correct?
It's. I guess it's going to be Tuesday. I thought it initially said Monday, but I guess it's going to be Tuesday.
Mr. Chairman, if I can ask another question, yeah. What, being that the House actually has to pass their bonding bill first, what would be the urgency? This is giving us members, certainly we've got all weekend to digest it, but if this is a lot of money, what's the urgency of the Senate to pass this right away? Why would not maybe the week after be a good time to pass the bill? What's the urgency?
Well, the timing was worked out more by leadership than it was by myself and Senator Representative Hausman. But when they asked me if I could meet this timetable, I said, "Sure, we can do it." But I don't, it'll be on general orders and then be laid on the table and then wait for the House to come over. And the House, I guess, is the following Monday that they'll be passing out and sending it over. But, the idea behind the urgency is to get it passed, allow the people involved to get their bids out there and so on, so that when the frost comes out, they will be ready to go. Now, I suppose you could argue a day, 2 days, a week, or whatever, but this was the timetable I was given, and I think... we've all been with this since last Labor Day, basically, I think, and went over the entire list as we made 300 stops around, and you were on most of them, and you're probably more knowledgeable than everybody except me.
Okay, thank you for that. Mr. Chairman, can I ask another question then? Being that ultimately the gentleman that has to sign this bill on the end is saying that he feels that the state of Minnesota should only have a bill in the $650 million range. Is the chairman concerned about a lot of these projects could just be line item vetoed out? Have you negotiated with the governor to say, oh, we're going to pass this bill do you have an agreement where he's not going to line item veto projects out?
No, we do not have an agreement with the governor. But, I will have to say in all honesty that when it comes to negotiating with the governor, it's you pass my bill and go home and I'll sign it. We have our own ideas on what we should be doing. And obviously this is this is the time to bond and build. I mean, you know, Minnesota ranks 42nd in the United States in per capita state debt. I like being low, but it doesn't have to be 42nd. It could be 40th or something like that. We're now coming in with bids at 15 to 20% below what they normally would be. You take this front page, for example. All of this is going to be done. This question is, when is it going to be done? Is it going to be done when we can take advantage of much lower bids at like 3.5% interest? It's just good business for us to do this. Now, you can certainly make comments about some of the projects as you go along, but generally speaking, the time to bond and build is when times are bad. I mean, the one-liners can say, well, we shouldn't be doing that now when we don't have the money. Well, this is a 20-year deal. It's infrastructure, which would last considerably beyond 20 years. This is the time to bond and build. And the sooner we can get at it, I mean, the difference between passing it in February and passing it in May is, in many cases, the difference between them doing it this summer versus getting it pushed off for a year. And we certainly hope that a year from now, things are going to be picking up, and maybe the interest rates will be a little higher and the bids won't be coming in quite as good because more people will be at work. So we just feel this is the time to do it, and the faster the better.
And, Mr. Chairman, if I can have one other question. You know, traditionally you always said that it's 3%. We don't want to go above the 3%. Does this put us above the 3%?
Well,
if it does, where are we at?
We're above the 3% simply because revenues dropped 18%. Now, the governor's office, and don't we have...
It's in here. It's in here.
Oh, yeah, in a packet. The administration come up with these new guidelines. What they did was they looked more at what the bond companies look for when it comes to the ratings. And I think one of it has to do with the percent of personal income in the state and this type of thing. Under that guideline, we could have gone to $1.7 billion. But then, of course, it would have dropped down quite a bit in the future. And some people could certainly make the case we should have done $1.7 billion this year. But obviously, politics is such that simply wouldn't have flown. In fact, I guess I wouldn't have voted for it. But that's where we're at with it. And I think this is the right way to go. And the difference between the governor's level and our level, I think this year was zero amount of money and extra debt service, and next year it's $2.5 million. And, you know, you figure the first 2-3 years, the economic spinoff, which will some of it come back to the state's treasury, would more than pay for the debt service in those first 2-3 years. As you get along, go into it further, obviously it's some other things that got to make it a good project. Like a lot of these projects, for example, on just many of them, when you get through with the renovations, it cuts way down on the energy costs that kick in almost immediately. So it's I just think it's we've struck the right balance, and we used to pass $1 billion bills many years ago, and now. Supposed to be down at a lot lower than that. And I just don't, you know, I'm a pretty conservative person. I mean, people even give me a bad time about my Park Avenue Buick's got 300,000 miles on it. So I'm, but there are just ways, and I've been in farming business, and, you know, one thing I've noticed in farming is the best farmers, and those are five, aren't the ones that spend the least. They're the ones that invest the most and are invested well. And also, you look at states, you look at different states, just pay attention to which states are the most prosperous states and which ones are not. And I think you come up with a little different spin on this whole thing than what we hear about so much.
Yep. Mr. Chairman, I got to say one other thing. I agree with you on one thing that I think we need to do a bonding bill. But I'm going to tell you that my wants and my needs speech, and you've heard this before, is we have needs. And I think needs are bridges, our roads, our truck stations, our military, men and women serving. But wants are like the zoo, and I'm sorry if that offends somebody. I'm actually not. The zoo or the Ordway or whatever the project is, I just don't know how we can go home when I've got 17% unemployment in Brainerd. I don't know how I'm trying to figure in my mind how do I explain that to the folks back home, because they think that we're just, they don't understand that we're borrowing the money. They think that we're just spending it. How do I explain that to them on these projects that are really kind of, in essence, fun stuff, really?
Well, I guess I'm not. Go ahead.
But just relative to the zoo, Mr. Chairman, from our conversations from earlier, I thought, I mean, there are many reasons to look at someone for the zoo, but I thought one of the reasons was that you hope to extend an olive branch to the governor, I had thought. Did I misunderstand
that? Well, he likes the one zoo and he doesn't like the other zoo. We did go with the governor's level on the Minnesota Zoo. The Como Zoo actually has more people go to it than what the Minnesota Zoo does. But I've been at both zoos, and you know who I see there? I see young couples with small children. And the one end of the Como one, there's no charge. There's a donation. You can have a family that's totally unemployed going out to the zoo for nothing. And I thought I was almost flabbergasted when over in the other body we were hearing about, oh, you care more about gorillas than you do children. Who is it that's there looking at the gorillas, you know? So I think it's when there's 2 million people that go to this zoo here and 1.5 million go to the other one, it's a very important thing for the state of Minnesota.
Well, I just want to change the subject for a minute. I've got an idea on how to reduce the cost of government, and it's an idea that some people are not going to like, but I want to lay the idea out right now with the idea of pursuing it a little bit later, and it affects this bill before us. We've seen a lot of local units of government in the state of Minnesota either lay off people or freeze salaries or limit the salary increases to as small amount as possible, and it seems to me that the workers that are going to benefit from this capital bonding bill and all the other construction workers that are employed through various projects throughout the state by local units of government should be able to be happy they've got a job and not allow the prevailing wage to increase beyond what it is at a certain point. In other words, freeze the prevailing wage for a 2-year period. And I understand in some situations it's going up maybe $1 or $2 an hour. I've got to do a little more research on this. John Fuller is drafting a bill right now for me. And he says it's fairly easy to do. He's got an idea in his head on how to do this. But the general gist of it would be to try to decrease the cost of government a little bit here by freezing the prevailing wage at its current level and not allowing it to increase for, say, maybe a 2-year period. And I know that's not palatable to some people, especially the labor unions, but we all have a stake in the future of Minnesota. We all need to step up to the plate and do our little part. Legislators have had their salaries frozen for 12 years, except for per diem payments. Other units of government are freezing salaries or limiting salary increases. And I think it'd be appropriate in a capital bonding bill like this, and also across the whole state of Minnesota for any project where the prevailing wage comes into play, is to just pass a simple bill that says we're not going to allow it to increase for 2 years to try to reduce the cost of government.
Thank you. And go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I think we've got this backwards. Our state is broke, and at least after today or maybe after next Tuesday, depending on what happens to this bill, we're going to spend the rest of this session talking about the budget. And we're going to be talking about cuts in health care and cuts or shifts or deferrals in education. And I think there's a large number of legislators who feel like that's what we should do first. That we should get our budget in order first before we get to this. I think another thing that would make me more comfortable is if we knew, okay, if the 3% guideline has been thrown out, well, what is the new guideline?
Well, it's in your packet, and it comes from the governor of the state of Minnesota.
Well, I understand that. But we haven't had a minute of hearing on this new guideline, and it's just awfully convenient that on the first day of session, here we go, and we throw out $1 billion of new promises. And this state is making promises that we can't keep. And we all know that. This has been a hard year, and this is going to be a hard session. But I don't think throwing out a $1 billion bonding bill today is going to make our jobs any easier. And I know we like to talk about jobs and employment, and that should be our focus. I'd love to hear some testimony. How many jobs is this going to create? I mean, that's part of the urgency that we're being told is let's get going on this. But, you know,
can we get that money from?
No offense to my colleagues from Rochester, but, you know, volleyball and another convention center. Those aren't careers. Those aren't industries. We're not going to come out of a recession because we remodel a dormitory. So I really think we should park this. These are good projects. I understand that, Mr. Chair. But at this time of our economy, you know, our state is broke. Our taxpayers are shrieking. And this is piling more debt on. At the wrong time.
Well, the timing, I think, is so important because of we want to get people working this year, not next year. I think that's what it's all about as far as the timing. But, you know, being the chair, I've had to look in depth at a lot of these projects. And some of them, on the surface, you would think were somewhat frivolous. Let's take the Rochester project, for example. You know, the Mayo people, the people come to the Mayo during the week, usually. And the weekend, the hotels are basically empty. That is a national volleyball center, which is there now, and they've had to turn away teams. They come in over the weekend out of state and stay in the hotels in Minnesota. The convention center, Mayo, because of their reputation, attracts medical people from around the world. They have had to, because of the size, and it looks like a big convention center, and it is, they have had to turn down conventions, medical conventions, with thousands of people because they can't accommodate. Almost all of those people that come in would be coming in from out of the state. In fact, many of them from outside of our country. Coming into Rochester, filling up the hotels, and when people go to conventions, they spend a lot of money. That's been proven. I think it was many years ago, it was something like the average person coming in spends, it's something like $400 or $500. These are thousands of people that wouldn't be here, that haven't been here because of that limitation. So when it comes to so many of these things that may seem like they aren't important, can have a lot to do with the state of Minnesota in the future, and the amount of money that we bring in from outside the state. And I think a lot of these people that come in for conventions, for example, don't go home right away. They come to Minnesota, and then they stick around for a week or so. So I understand what you're saying, but I think the end result on many of these things is quite a bit different than what you're talking about.
Well, and Mr. Chair, if I may, I am not... I don't represent Rochester. I hear a lot of great things about Rochester from Senator Senjum and others. I know that the city of Rochester, and particularly the Mayo Clinic right now, are watching what we're doing with our budget and are watching what we do with GAMC. I would submit that those are probably bigger issues for that region than the volleyball center. Now, there's a good story behind every one of these lines. But
that's why they're there. That's why they're there.
There's a good story behind every one of these lines, but... The bigger environment that we are facing, I think, requires us to slim this down, do first things first, and I would echo Senator Coring's kind of dividing needs from wants.
Senator Stump.
Mr. Chairman, just a couple of... points or questions. We spent, I'm not sure if it was 6 or 7 weeks last fall and early winter going around looking at these projects and all over the state and put on a lot of miles. And I know when we're down in, I believe, your district in Normandale, looking at Normandale, The amount, I mean, there were so many projects, and I it was very difficult because you come away looking at these projects and you think, wow, this is good, that's good, you know, and pretty soon you have such a huge volume of needs. But one of the things that I'm wondering about is how, when I stood back and looked at all these projects, one kind of a common thread that stood out was there's an enormous amount of interest in the kind of the environmental. We had so many communities that had were hoping for trails or extension of trails or parks, something that related to tourism and some kind of enhancement of the environmental. How does the, and I'm not even sure the exact name, but how does the committee that deals with the environment and some of the environmental funding tie into the bonding bill? Like, do they kind of work with the some of the environmental programs in here? And I'm not sure exactly how much they have to spend. I think it's probably around $20 million. But do we kind of coordinate with them?
We now have the legacy.
The legacy.
The legacy. Right, yeah. That's what you're searching for. Okay. I'm not on that. Some people are. I think your seatmate there probably knows more than most of the people on the committee here does. And I don't know if you want to make a comment or.
I don't, Mr. Chairman, I don't have those latest appropriations in front of me. I know much of that money went out to grants to communities.
Hey, I do have an author's amendment. You know, with all this, there's always something that falls through the cracks. And maybe Kathy, you can explain it a little better than I do. It was supposed to be in the bill, and when we looked at the bill, it wasn't there after the jackets and everything. So why don't you just...
I'll move the amendment.
Huh?
I'll move the amendment.
Okay.
How about Peter?
Okay, Peter, maybe you can explain.
Mr. Chairman, as the amendment's being distributed, it's to add some new language on page 41 after line 8, and this is part of a larger appropriation, $30 million, to the Metropolitan Council for various transit corridors. And there are 15, I think, of them named in the bill already, but the central corridor had not been named. And there was no money set aside for improving this area just right outside the north side of the Capitol. And the proposal, as you get it, you'll see, is to set aside $1.2 million of that $30 million for improvements to state property along either side of the railroad tracks as they pass the Capitol to just improve the appearance of the line at that location so that it doesn't detract from the grandeur of the Capitol as it runs by.
Okay, that, like I say, that was supposed to have been in there, and then when we read the bill, why it wasn't in there. So, Senator Pappas, would you like to?
I think Senator Berglund moved it, but I'm
Yes. Okay, any questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried.
Mr. Chair, I just have a couple comments that, and we discussed these yesterday when we met as Republicans, but we talked, number one, about the priorities of the state. And in the corrections category on page, or line 301, with the armor system that has not been funded, and I did check on those figures, that by not funding this program, it is a $10,000 per campus per month penalty on that. So the governor fully funded it, and there's no money for that. I think this is something that needs to be addressed. And also, if I may say, the Oak Park Heights upgrade security system was not funded also. These are priorities by the corrections department that are mandatory. So if you could share what we're going to do about this problem. I don't believe the state can afford $10,000 per month per campus as a penalty.
The one that you're talking about, a lot of it wasn't bondable. That was one of the reasons that went out. Now, you're talking about this fine. We have never heard anything about that. Who is doing the fining, and, I mean, is it going on right now?
No, Mr. Chair, if the armor is not set up by a certain time, the federal government will fine the state.
When are you? What kind of time?
I don't know those. And we can get that more information. I'm not sure if somebody here wants to talk about that. And I know part of it was not funded, is not bondable, but I would assume that this is the figure that is bondable. I don't know, but I do know this is a problem.
No, it's part of this is not part of that request is not bondable. At first, we got the idea that it wasn't bondable at all, but then it's part of it. But I guess I'd like to get more information about that. You mentioned that yesterday,
yeah.
And we really haven't had a chance to take a good look at that.
Well, Mr. Chair, I hope we can take a look at that. And I have one more thing I'd like to mention, too.
Somebody here from Corrections, I guess, maybe
okay.
Make a comment.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is David Christ. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Corrections. The armor project, our original request was $7.4 million. We were informed late in the game by MMB that $1.6 million of that was not bondable and that approximately $5.8 million of the armor project was bondable. The deadline for conversion from wideband radio communications to narrowband radio communications is January 1st of 2013. If we operate our existing radio frequencies after that date, we will be subject to sanction and possible monetary fines from the Federal Communications Commission.
So we have about 3 years.
FCC.
We've got some time to get going on that. There's a lot of buildings that need to be constructed on six of our campuses to house the radio gear. There's radio towers, antenna towers. There's wiring that needs to be done, equipment that needs to be procured for the project. And we estimate we're going to need a good portion of those 3 years to get that project completely designed and installed and fine-tune it so that we can turn it on when we have to.
Any comments or questions from the committee?
Mr. Chair, and what would be the money requirement?
Mr. Chair, Senator Senjum, we would be asking for approximately $5.8 million on that project at this time.
Since we have 3 years, would some money now help and be able to keep you moving at the pace you'd like to?
Mr. Chair, if the project were to be phased in at this point, we would start with those hard aspects of the infrastructure, the buildings, the antennas, the things that would take some time to be put in place. We also have a priority on our Minnesota Correctional Facility at Faribault, where they have absolutely no compatibility with this new narrowband frequency technology. And so that being our largest prison now at 2,005 offenders, we would have to make priority for that facility first.
Okay. Any more comments or questions on that matter? Senator Foley.
Senator Langseth, I would suggest that you throw this over to Senator Higgins, who is chairman of the committee and have an opportunity. We've looked at this type of legislation for a number of years in the communications field, and some of that has resulted in some money spent in ways that couldn't tie them up. The idea is to get something so that you have an ability to communicate various locations, and the it's a long-term effect, is my understanding, and I just think that Senator Higgins should have a hearing.
We probably should contact the senator and ask her to take her committee to take a good look at it and come with some recommendations. Okay, Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to quickly follow up on Senator Stump's question, I think there's been a strong coalition of conservation groups, environmental sportsmen alike, that are very interested in making sure that in order to uphold the trust that Minnesota voters put into us in passing the legacy amendment, that we continue all the traditional sources of outdoor funding that we have, and that and to stay true to the language, that we will not be supplanting our the new money by replacing with old money. I think to a large degree your bill has helped with that. Reinvestment in Minnesota, some of the parks money, some of the trails money. I think we'll have to perhaps analyze distribution, but in the area of wildlife management areas and aquatic management areas, the bonding bill has been the sole source of funding. The largest source of funding, traditional source of funding. For AMAs, it's been the only source. And it was disappointing to see the governor come out with only $4 million when I've seen upwards of $10 million or more for wildlife management areas. In fact, we've put in millions more for the Forest Legacy Program, which really is important to southeast Minnesota, northern Minnesota, and that wasn't even in the bill, which is another issue. But that wasn't even a proposal, so that's another issue. But it would be, I'd be remiss not to mention the wildlife management areas and the aquatic management areas. They, when we talk about healthcare facilities and such, it these types of environmental issues sometimes pale in comparison. But I think there is a very large statewide issue of what the voters trusted us to do with the new sales tax dollars, and that was not to replace it. And I think we've done a fair job in the bill on this, and I think if we can take a look at the WMA-AMA issue, I think that'd be important. And the second thing I wanted to build upon was Senator Michelle's comments about the budget and jobs. I heard a lot of fear in the voices of people that I met at the caucuses on Tuesday about jobs and the economy. And I shared the fear that I have regarding the budget and the difficulties we're going to have in making investments in the jobs and the economy. The bonding bill is our only way to do that, in my estimation. And that's why I think that stimulating job growth in Minnesota is got to be our number one priority if we are going to look in the future of solving these budget issues that we're having. Not that it is less important, but I think it's important for Minnesotans to know, with my own values, that this is the first thing we want to come out of the gate doing, is addressing our long-term economic situation in Minnesota, and that that it should benefit them. And so I just wanted to just conclude with, I guess, a question for council. If you can tell me, and I think I know the answer, but do we have anything in the rules or statute that say that any money we use from these bonding projects will be used to hire Minnesotans to work on these projects?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Chaudhry, no, there's nothing in the law now.
Okay. I think that by and large, we could probably count on the lion's share of this money going to Minnesotans. But I think if we are going to invest in $1 billion in a dire economic crisis, it would be difficult for me to look on the news this summer and see the story of a union construction worker who's been on the bench for 10 months, 18 months in line at a food shelf watching a busload of workers from another state coming in to work on a bonding project the Minnesota taxpayers approved. So I think it's something, I don't have an amendment today, but it's something that I think we ought to strongly consider doing, if just for this year and for just these projects. That's the last comment I'd like to make. And I just think that it's worthy of our discussion here in the Senate, at the very least, to make sure that all of these dollars go towards Minnesotans, create Minnesota jobs that contribute to Minnesota's economic health, so we are able to help solve our budget situations in future years. That's all, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, this bill is about putting people to work, and it's about getting people back to work who are not working right now, and it's about building things that need to be built and maintaining things that need to be maintained. And the sooner we get it passed, the better off we are, and the sooner we'll get people back to work and get people working and paying taxes and contributing to the problem that we actually have in financing the state. And Mr. Chairman, I think having said that I will move the bill. If you need someone to move the bill, I will be happy to move the bill and say that we should get this out the door as quickly as possible so that we can get people on the ground working as soon as the frost comes out. So I'll move the bill, Mr. Chairman.
The bill has been moved. Is this a bill? I mean, what's the proper motion?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think what the usual situation is that we're working off of a Senate Council document, and the motion is that the document SC 7034-1 be introduced by the chair on behalf of the committee.
So Senator Tomasoni moves
on behalf of the chair.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator, go ahead.
Senator Rosen. Thank you, Mr. Chair. If we're talking about jobs, I'd also like to bring the committee's attention to the portion, the bill on the physics and nano building. And we did talk about this yesterday, that it obviously is a proposal that is for the future of Minnesota. And it is going to bring in jobs, obviously very high-paying jobs. It was funded by the governor, and I know that you received instructions from the university to only do the pre-planning, but I do want to steer the committee's attention to a letter that was signed by myself, Senator Latz, Senator Senjum, Senator Saltzman, Senator Lynch, Senator Metzen, Senator Scheid, Senator Wieger, Senator Bonhoff, Senator Carlson, and Senator Sparks. And there is a bipartisan support for this project because it does move the state forward in the right direction in the realm of bioscience and nanotechnology, and it's very exciting. So I was hoping that we could have go ahead and taken the recommendations and moved forward, and it would create jobs.
Yeah, we talked to the people at the University of Minnesota, and this was the recommendation they gave us. They wanted the planning money and so on for the project you're talking about. And they are getting that, and I think if somebody from the university wants to comment on that, that's fine. But we did follow their recommendations as far as the timing and so on.
Mr. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair and committee members, Kathleen O'Brien, Vice President for University Services at the University of Minnesota. Of course, the university would appreciate having our request fully funded. but given the limits of funding, we've requested planning money for the physics and nano building. As you suggest, Mr. Chair, given the timing of completing the project, we believe that's a more prudent way to proceed.
Okay. Thank you. And I shouldn't refer to the other body, but I did. They are online with their bill, and we are much friendlier to the University of Minnesota than others. Senator Corning.
Mr. Chairman, I got a question for Mr. Watson. I guess I don't understand the process. So we haven't introduced this bill in the Senate. So can you explain the process to me of how this is working?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Corning, this is a committee bill process that's used by the Capital Investment Committee almost every year, not every year, but almost every year, and used by the Finance Committee for their bills, where instead of having an author introduce a bill that then goes through hearings and gets amended and amended and amended, the bill is not written until after the hearings have occurred and the members have decided what they want to put into the bill. And the bill is put together. The committee then recommends the bill, and it's introduced by the chair on behalf of the committee at the end of the committee process. Under this process, under the rules of the Senate, when a bill is introduced in the Finance Committee or by the Finance Committee chair, then it does not have to go back to the Finance Committee for another hearing because it's already been heard in Finance. With this bill, the process is a little bit different in that it's coming out of capital investment. It still needs to go to the Finance Committee, so it doesn't get that
warped.
Skipping going to committee, but that's what the committee bill process was designed for, is to just allow the committee to take its action first.
And then, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Watson, so if this bill was introduced on the floor and was sent here, and I'm saying if it was, then it would take two-thirds majority of this committee to pass it out. And does that mean that we need two-thirds now?
Just keep going.
No, Mr. Chairman, Senator Corning, a committee never needs a two-thirds vote to pass a bill.
Okay.
A committee, it's always a simple majority.
Okay.
You're thinking of, I think, the vote on the floor. On the floor, to pass an ordinary bill, you need 34 votes. Mm-hmm. But to pass a general obligation bonding bill like this one, you need a 3/5 vote. But that's on the floor. That's not in committee.
Okay. Even if a bill is introduced, Mr. Chairman, even if a bill is introduced and the bill is sent immediately the same day, it doesn't need two-thirds?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Corning, you're thinking of the requirement to declare an urgency, mm-hmm. and perhaps suspend the rules in order to not be giving a bill three readings on three different days. For example, if this bill were to come out of the Finance Committee tomorrow and be reported as a committee report on Monday, if the Senate wanted to take it up not just on second reading but on third reading on Monday, then there would need to be a two-thirds vote to declare an urgency and suspend the rules to take it up on Monday.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Senator Sharon.
Thank you, Senator Langseth. Would you tell me again the numbers that you mentioned about the differential between if we went with a lower budget, the governor's budget, and this proposed budget in terms of the obligation in the next 2 years from the two or 3 years from the general fund? I think you said zero in 2010, and the second number was?
$2.5 million, I believe. I'm going to defer to Senator Cohen, because I guess I heard the numbers from him. I don't know if I heard it correctly or not, but Senator Cohen, you've got that down.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think you've got this detail in the back, but it's roughly $2.5 million. Let me take a look.
While you were looking at that, then, I'm just reflecting on our conversation about our priorities and about how to best utilize money from the general fund in order to meet our priorities in the best interest in the state, and whether or not doing it through bonding is and committing future dollars to pay back the bonds versus leaving that money by having a smaller bonding bill in the general fund to offer us an opportunity to make maybe just a little bit less cuts in the various divisions. But for those numbers that you're describing, 0 and, and 10 and 2.5 million from the general fund to be spent to achieve what this bonding bill is capable of doing seems to me to be, it would be irresponsible to not do it for the return on that investment. And I think that in terms of those who might be concerned about the number of jobs that will be created, when we went around and visited these various bonding communities and reviewed the bonding requests, every single one of them identified the number of jobs that could be created from this. And that information is available, and it's very impressive. So as I listen to you talk about the implications from the general fund and the choice that some have talked about of leaving it there to prevent maybe some cuts, when you're talking about what we can achieve with 2.5 in cuts versus what we can achieve with $2.5 million of investment in job creation, I think it would be irresponsible to not do this.
Mr. Chair. Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Earlier when it was brought up about the guideline, the 3% guideline, you referenced us or you directed us to the document that's in our folder, which is, I don't have a microphone, I probably, is this one? You directed us to the document in our folder, the capital investment guidelines, that this is, I guess, what we'd be using. So we've left the traditional customary 3% behind us. We've gotten out this. So I have three questions, Mr. Chairman. This will be either for you or for council. So that I understand, I'd like to know if this bill fits the new guidelines. They're a little more complicated, but my first question would be, guideline number one says that total tax-supported principal outstanding shall be 3.25% or less of total state personal income. So my question is, does this bill meet guideline number one?
I've certainly been told it is. That when people tell me that that are in the know that we could go to $1.7 billion, I expect less than $1 billion definitely fits it.
Okay. All right. Well, then, Mr. Chairman, that guideline number two says the total amount of principal, both issued and authorized but unissued, for state general obligations, state moral obligations, equipment capital leases, and real estate leases are not to exceed 6% of state personal income. Does this bill before us today meet guideline number two?
Yes, I have been told that it does. Now, what that guideline is talking about is more what you know. We got this from the tax foundation that says we're 42nd. It says we're at $1,700 per capita. Well, that gets us way up to $8 or $9 billion, which is way over our general obligation. But what that is taking all these things into consideration, not just geo bonds, but trunk highway bonds. With debt service on some of the university thing, and even leased money for buildings, so that's why that's a higher figure, but it does fit that. Yes, we've been told that.
Okay, and Mr. Chairman, then the last guideline is number three. It says 40% of general obligation debt shall be due within 5 years, and 70% within 10 years, if consistent with the useful life of the financed assets and/or market
that's
conditions.
Correct.
Does this bill meet guideline number three?
Yes,
it's a cumulative thing, but
it always has. We've got a very conservative payback in the state of Minnesota, and it does this. And I think a lot of people would be very surprised that we're paying back those bonds that fast. And our bill has always done that, and it does it this year as well.
Okay. All right. Well, I wanted to know where we stood with this. I mean, if these are going to be the new guidelines, are we as a committee, as a legislature, as a co-equal branch of government, accepting from the executive branch that these are the guidelines? I mean, is this in there? Do we use this when it's convenient, or do we discard this down the road? I'm just wondering, is this the benchmark for the future, or is this a moving target?
Well, you know, the old 3%. You couldn't find it any place.
That's right. That's correct.
I mean, it was just, but it was a discipline. And I think what the bonding companies really liked was some kind of discipline. And I, as a chair, like a discipline of some kind, whatever is realistic. because I got to say no to over $2 billion worth of stuff. Now, Kathy, I think you had some.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if you read this further, after guideline number one, it says currently $5.4 billion of tax-supported debt issued is equal to 2.5% of personal income. So currently, if we didn't do any bonding bill, we have $5.4 billion outstanding, and that's 2.5% of personal income. So the guideline is 3.25, the new guideline. The second one is the 6% of state personal income, and the last bullet says currently $9.9 billion is authorized, and that's equal to 4.5%. So when they told us that we could go to $1.7 billion in this bill and still stay under the guidelines, you see where we're at right now. Okay. So that's all on this page.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I'm concerned about the level of debt because I understand what this is saying, but this is what you said about the discipline is important. This is really a loosening of that discipline because if this is the standards being used, it's a national average. This comes from the same sort of guidelines that puts us at kind of the 42nd you mentioned.
I'm not sure if it's a national average.
I mean, these are sort of derived by these same national averages and such, but we're better than the national average. We have been. I hope we're not trending towards the national average of high debt. We know what situation we find other states are in, California, New York, many other states. I don't know that they should be models for us. With all of this, I personally prefer our older system of the tighter discipline. It was simpler, it was tighter. Now we've got more complex but looser guidelines. I hope it doesn't put us down the road, or it looks like it is, to a willingness for more debt than we can carry down the road. That's my point I wanted to make.
Well, I don't think the national average is part of this. It is, you know, we got a fairly conservative administration, and it's the guidelines they came out with. And I think they go to the bond companies and present facts and figures when they want to sell some bonds. So they know what it is that the bond companies look at, and they're looking at this rather than whatever percent of the general fund it is. So, I mean, the legislature did not come out with this recommendation. The administration, and we don't have a problem with it, obviously. And we're not going to the level this allows us to go to at all. Senator Metzen.
Chairman, we don't talk about it, I think, too much, is that half of the cost of these projects, at least half or 60% of the cost of these projects, is wages. And the other 50% is product. You take our tax rate in Minnesota times the $500 or $600 million that the workers are paying. You talk about debt service. I haven't put the numbers to it, but that would more than take care of the debt service. And then people are working, and like Thomas Oney and Senator Sharon and others talking about jobs. But I haven't heard that discussed too much. Man, you might have touched on it earlier, but yeah. Again. 50% to 60% is salaries, and they're all paying income taxes on that money. So that's a big number, and I don't have that number, but that certainly would take care of that pot going forward.
Well, I didn't put a calculator to it, but it was very, very obvious that what would come back to the state treasury during the time of that construction would be far more than the debt service. Now, obviously, the debt service does increase as we go along. Hopefully,
some of the product is sales tax, too.
Yeah.
Not all of it.
Oh, yeah.
Get some
yeah, that's true. That's yeah. true. Sales tax on that. So I think the first 2-3 years, you're getting far more back from the state into the state treasury than what the debt service is. Senator Sinchin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to follow up on Senator Sharon and Senator Cohen's answer because I'm frankly trying to understand it. And at least from our side, the number that we typically carry around with us is the payment on the debt service currently is $1,230,000 a day. $1,230,000 a day. And they may have sold more bonds since then, and it may have increased. But going back to Senator Cohen's comment about $2.5 million, what does that mean in reference to what I just said?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sinchin, as I understood Senator Sharon's question, I believe she was asking for the distinction between what's budgeted, not necessarily in the governance bill, but what's in the current budget relative to debt service, and what the additional increase in debt service would cost. And I actually verified the figure with Mr. Watson. I was a little bit off. It's a little bit under $2.5 million. It's like $2.461 million. And so that's the additional amount of money we have to book, which we are relative to debt service. So the question on, as Senator Sharon pointed out, on kind of a, if you look at one end of the equation versus the other, what does this mean by way of additional income taxes to Minnesota, additional employment, additional utilization, if you can do it fairly quickly, as Senator Langseth has talked about, relative to the cost of building right now, the ability to do this fairly early, would the state be able to recoup over the period of time, the 2.461? And the expectation is probably that and much more.
Much more.
Mr. Chairman, so if I understand, you're suggesting that we could add another $1 billion to our our bonding level currently, and it would cost us, in terms of general fund dollars, $2.5 million a year or a biennium, or is that what you're saying?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Senjum, no, this is the $2.5 million or the $2.461 million is the difference between where this bill is and what's currently in the state budget. So if you added another $1 billion, it would be proportionally larger. That also is based upon when the bonds are sold. The cost we need for this additional bonding authority for the biennium is the $2.461 million. Now, as it gets larger exponentially, then the cost goes up that much higher. I mean, obviously, if Senator Langseth came to the Finance Committee tomorrow morning, and you'll get a chance now to question that, if Senator Langseth came to the Finance Committee tomorrow morning and had a bill that was, say, a $3 billion bill, that probably would be difficult to do. But he tried to be fairly careful in working with a number that was doable.
Mr. Chairman.
I think I understand.
You see, in the budget projections, what's factored in is the, like, $725 million or something like that. So this $2.5 million is what goes over and above that, Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, something similar to the discussion you're just having, something that you've talked about with other bonding bills and something Senator Cohen has worked on in state law. Even if this bill would become law just as it is, does not mean that the state would be going out and selling almost $1 billion worth of bonds. There's some other considerations go into that decision. Mm. The projects have to be ready to go. Mm. The Commissioner of Finance and the Governor look at the bond market, look at the ability to handle the debt service within the state budget. So these bonds will not automatically be sold. There's some additional management by the administration that takes place before those bonds are sold.
I was talking to Mr. Fitzenreiter from the university, and he mentioned they were doing some of this almost daily bonding for like a quarter of a percent or something, and doing that and then trying to catch the right day to put out the long-term bonds. And so it changes daily, and it's kind of interesting that you borrow this money and you're paying an annual equivalent of a quarter of a percent or something. But they tried to manage their debt in that flexible manner where they could pick the right day. And the state has done that to a certain extent. I think one time they kind of put it off, and then by the time they sold them, it was down a fair amount, just right, as a matter of days or weeks.
Yeah. Chair.
Go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I probably won't be specific because, well, I will if I have to, but throughout here, and particularly with projects that are grants to local either cities or counties, in many cases you'll see the terminology about the match, the equal amount committed, mm-hmm, et cetera, et cetera. But not on all of them. And I'm just kind of wondering, whether or not there's an explanation, and maybe we have to go one by one, but is an explanation that suggests that in large part that provision does exist, but in a number it doesn't exist?
I guess I was just wondering, if we don't say anything, is it automatically 50-50?
Mr. Chairman, the policy set forth in Section 16A.86 is that there should be a 50% match for any grants to a political subdivision. That's the policy. But if it's not stated in the bill, then it doesn't apply. Most of our grant programs have a 50% match requirement. Not all, but most of them do. So when we're making individual grants in the bill that are not part of a program that already has a match requirement, then normally we put the 50% in. There are a few where the match is a little bit lower, and there are some where the match is higher. But the 50% is the normal.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, just to point out, I mean, that's I'm not being critical, but that's just that policy hasn't consistently been applied to some of the projects in the bill.
Well, sure, when it isn't applied, and it's probably more generous from the state of Minnesota, there's usually a reason for it. Remember, we funded the hockey arenas for Crookston. And the reason we didn't go with the 50-50 was because to get the dikes in to protect the town, they had to take the old hockey arenas out. So we went further. I think, I don't know, we came with $10 million, and I've heard different figures of what the total cost was, some $13 million, some $15. So there we went over and above, but the reason was that those arenas had to go. And we deviate based upon different reasoning. It's just that the 50-50 is kind of the common way of doing it, and if there's a good reason not to do that, then we deviate from that. Okay. Motion has been made. Is there any further comments? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
Carried. Thank you. Tomorrow, we're before finance.
Paul does it.